2003. We're in work session on House Bill 5052, which is the budget bill for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. And we have here today Mr. Philip Lehman, the jobs manager at the Department of Human Services, and he's here to answer the questions that we were raising in the session yesterday about what happens to the uncommitted money in the in that account. That just give us some detail on how that ends up being transferred over to the Student Assistance Commission and what the parameters are around holding the money and accounting for the money within the DHS arena. So, Mr. Lehman, if I could just turn it over
sure.
to you.
Okay, thank you, Manager. I'm Phil Lehman, Workforce Manager for Department of Human Services and do welfare to work programs. You should have a handout in front of you, Jobs Plus Individual Education Account Funds. Just real quickly to make sure everybody's on the same page, a little background. Jobs Plus is a subsidized work program for people receiving unemployment insurance and welfare or temporary assistance to needy families. It was established by the legislature in 1995, and what it does is somebody's hired as a Jobs Plus employee, the wages are at least partially reimbursed by the state through monies that would have gone to that individual through unemployment insurance, welfare, or food stamps. As part of Jobs Plus, the last bullet there in the first section, is that the law requires the employer to contribute $1 per hour that the Jobs Plus employee works into an individual education account fund. And these funds then are available to that person once they leave Jobs Plus and have a full-time unsubsidized job for 30 days. And they can use that money for up to 5 years for themselves or anybody in their immediate family for books, supplies, tuition, and fees. Now, the way the process works is the employer pays the Jobs Plus employee and then sends a bill to us, and we reimburse the employer. After the first 30 days, we deduct that $1 per hour worked off of the employer's reimbursement, avoids having them cut us another check. So we then put that in an individual education account fund, maintain that at Department of Human Services. And then when the person leaves Jobs Plus, we send them a letter saying, a notification letter, that these funds are available, and that it, when they become eligible, they return it to us, and then we transfer the money down to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. So down there at the bottom, you'll see the money figures. Mm-hmm. So as of the beginning of May, $8.7 million has been collected from employers for individual education account funds. $2.6 million of that, or 30%, has been transferred down to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. And $4.3 million is money that's held in the Department of Human Services in accounts that are less than 5 years old, so they're unexpired accounts. And $1.7 million was transferred to DHS in 2001 per House Bill 4035.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordon, thank you very much, Mr. Lehman, for being here to help us understand the individual education account portion of the Jobs Plus program. Can you also tell us how many clients have actually used their accounts?
Senator Gordon, Madam Chair, yes, I have that figure. The number of people who, this is again at the end of April, the number of people who have been through the Jobs Plus program is 22,823. The number of people that have actually sent us back a form and claimed that money that we've sent down to the Student Assistance Commission, is 3,888. So 17% of those people have claimed their money. And then the number of people that have actually used that money once it went down to the Student Assistance Commission is 8%, or 1,745. I will point out that the number of people that have claimed the money is 17%, but that accounts for 30% of the money. What happens here a lot of times is people are in Jobs Plus for a short time, have a small amount of money, and never end up claiming that money. So the larger the account, the more likely they are to claim the money.
And so, again, just for clarity, the 1,745 number is the number of clients who have done what?
Senator Gordon, Madam Chair, yes, who have actually used the money, who have actually spent the money. The money's been transferred to the Student Sentence Commission, and they've accessed that money and used it.
And that was, did you say 8%?
8%. 8%. Of the total number of people have been in Jobs Plus.
And the total number is the 22,000.
That's correct.
823.
That's correct. Realized in that number would be some people who never went 30 days, who never stayed in a job the first 30 days, and the Individual Education Account Fund doesn't start until day 31.
And the figures that you've given us, Mr. Lehman, go back to the establishment of the program in 1995. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. Thank you.
Representative.
Yeah, Madam Chair, it's pretty obvious this is sort of an underutilized or rarely utilized program. My guess is because most of those accounts are so small. Is that correct?
Representative Bate, Madam Chair, there's a lot of speculations on why people don't access that money. A lot of clientele is actually welfare recipients, so you have working mothers with children, and the idea of going to school isn't something that doesn't fit into their schedule. But in some cases, those accounts are very small, especially now with the people going in the program through unemployment insurance. The maximum amount of time that they can be in the program is 13 weeks. So you subtract off the first 4 weeks, and you've got 9 weeks of money going into that account. If you worked full time, you would have around $175 a month put into that account. So in a 2 month period, you might only have $350. If you were in the Jobs Plus program the full 6 months, as a welfare client can be, the maximum amount would be around $850.
Do you have any idea what the average grant per recipient is that you pass through to the Student Assistance Commission?
I don't, Madam Chair, I don't have that figure. No, I don't have that. I'm sorry.
And this is a one-time chunk of money that's available to people that were enrolled in this program.
Correct. Yes.
That appears to be somewhere between, would you say, 300 to 800 is the ballpark on the grants?
Madam Chair, yes, that would be a very good figure. 800 is going to be the max, and you're going to see accounts that are going to be as low as a few dollars. But generally, somebody that makes it past the first month in the program usually stays at least 2 or 3 months. So you're looking at most of them having somewhere between $300 and $800 in that account.
The other question that I had was, well, the money is sitting in this account, and it's kind of a rolling pool of money. What happens to the interest that's accrued on it?
Madam Chair, I don't know the answer to that. I would have to check with our accounting department on that. I will find that out.
Where it goes?
Madam Chair, another question related to that. Again, looking at the detail at the bottom of the fact sheet you've given us, $8.7 million has been collected, but only a portion of that went to the Student Assistance Commission. I'm still not clear on why the total amount didn't go to the Student Assistance.
Yes, Senator Gordon, Madam Chair, $8.7 million has been collected. $2.6 million has been sent in, and that's people that have actually returned a form to us and says, I'm eligible, please send my money down to the Student Assistance Commission. We, Department of Human Services, are the accounting function of the program. We are holding on to that $4.3 million because it's within their 5-year period of leaving Jobs Plus. So they still have, their accounts are unexpired by law. They do not expire until 5 years, and we don't transfer that money down there until after it's expired. Their main point of contact, the logic behind this, the main point of contact is going to be with our agency. We are the ones who actually send out a form to them. We are the ones who they return the forms to us. They're our main contract. contact. So they would not really be aware of the existence of the Student Assistance Commission until after the money's transferred and they notify them. So we are merely holding on to those accounts that are unexpired or unclaimed and unexpired.
Representative Smith.
You partially answered my question.
Okay.
You said you send out a form. I'm wondering if these people that have money in the accounts aren't aware that they have money in the accounts, but I would think that your outreach, too, would be difficult and maybe time-consuming and too expensive.
Representative Smith, Madam Chair, this has always been an issue. We've done several outreach things, sending them out reminders, mm-hmm. You've got money in these accounts. Sometimes people do move and we do lose contact with them. But we also work through our local offices, send out lists to them and say, here are the people in the local office that we show as having money in your account. You know, work with them to make them aware of that. But periodically, in the last couple of years, we've sent out an annual reminder for this group, this $4.3 million group, saying there's money sitting here for you for educational purposes.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm Representative
Bates. One thing that crosses my mind is the administrative cost of running this program, mm-hmm. What little gain we appear to be getting from it. This is a very convoluted program, and you must have people dedicated to sending those notices out, following the notices, bringing the notices back, and trying to award money through the opportunity grant. The purpose of the program appears to be to try to help low-income Oregonians get a better education so they can return to the workforce or get into the workforce. When I look at these sort of things, I kind of think it wouldn't be just easier to transfer this kind of money straight into the opportunity grant and let these people access education at community college or community schools or higher ed directly to the opportunity grant program, simplify the program, get rid of the administrative overhead, and move this money into an area that might be more accessible to those people and be meaningful to them. A grant of $170 or $250 doesn't mean much to somebody on a low-income status trying to go to university or college or a trade school, but the opportunity grant really is meaningful. And this is money that could be, I think, maybe better spent in that venue. It's something to be discussed and thought about, but it just seems like a convoluted Byzantine program that's kind of gone down the wrong direction, even though it had very good intentions behind it. The money just isn't being utilized.
Representative Bate, Madam Chair, first, there is some administrative cost, but a lot of these forms are just computer generated, so they automatically go out to a person once the contract ends in our computer. But also, I think the original idea behind this, back when Jobs Plus was initiated in 1995, was you take somebody with low skills, you offer a carrot to an employer so that they hire them, they're successful, they get a job, and then you offer them some more money so that they can get some education and skills to go on further. That was the original intent on how all the individual education accounts fit into the Jobs Plus picture.
If I might, I agree with Representative Bates. I think that there is a straighter path to getting this money to low-income people that are trying to improve their educational opportunities, and the opportunity grants is that path. How to accomplish that, which requires, I would imagine, some statutory changes to have that happen, would be outside of the venue of the committee to be able to do. But I know that there is discussion right now around having the policy side of the building tackle some of these kinds of questions. Mm-hmm. And so this is something I think that we should, if there is a group that comes around or forms up around educational policy issues, that this is something that they should definitely be taking a look at. I do think that for the amount of money and the process that's involved in matching people up with the amount of money that they're getting out of this, that it's a lot of process for very little effect, and that there are ways to streamline the process. The question I had on the information, the statistical information you were giving us, and correct me if I didn't hear correctly what you were saying, but I thought you said that 17% of the people claim the money, but 8% of the people use it? And I'm wondering if you could enlighten me about what that's all about.
Yes, Madam Chair. That means 17% of the people have actually sent us back a form and says, I'm eligible. So they've claimed the money. And then we transfer that money down to the Student Assistance Commission. Once that money gets down there, that $2.6 million, then 8% of the grand total have used the money. That's not 8% of the 17%. It's 8% of the entire people that have ever been into Jobs Plus.
Those 17% of the people have claimed their money and it's been sent over to OSAC, they all use that money?
Then, yeah. Madam Chair, the usage is 3,888 accounts have been transferred down to the Student Assistance Commission. Of that, 1,745 have actually used that money. So 50%.
So what happens to those other people?
The other people, the 83% who never claim the money,
yeah.
Then the money is eventually transferred to the Oregon Opportunity Grant if it goes expired after 5 years and unclaimed.
So if people call you or get a hold of you and say, I want to take advantage of the money that I have coming to me in my individual education account, you send the money over to OSAC.
Correct.
The individual doesn't actually pick their money up, then does OSAC have to send it back to you so that
no,
you
can accrue
it?
No, Madam Chair. They keep the money, and then they work with the educational institution to make the payment for them. The money is never in the hand of the participant.
Well, but I'm curious about the ones where you send the money over, and then for whatever reason the student never claims the grant. What happens to that
money? Then that money rolls over into the Oregon Opportunity Grant.
Immediately? Or
after 5 years.
So do you hold it for the duration of the 5 years before you roll it into the opportunity grants?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes. And we work with the individuals and communicate with them, much like Phil is talking about in their area, about the opportunity to use it. So the way that it was set up, it was they have 5 years in which to use the money.
This seems like a tremendous clerical undertaking for the amount of money involved here.
And we did it to them.
Yeah.
It's our fault.
Madam Chair, remember to me. Could I point out a couple of other things? Realize it would take statutory change to change how the funding source goes. But there has also been, I think, a commitment here to the people that go into the program that this money is there for them for up to 5 years after they leave the program, and also to the employers. I mean, a lot of the employers hire these people under the regular payroll and then want them to take advantage of some training, which can be paid for out of this fund. So we do get calls from employers and say, can, you know, Jane, take this class and have it paid for out of these funds? So I think there's been a commitment there as well.
Well, go ahead, Representative.
If you get a call from an employer that asks that kind of a question, could you refer them to the Oregon Opportunity Grant to get the same kind of support?
Representative Bates, Madam Chair, yes, we would. I mean, we would, first of all, tell the employer, this is the employee's money. They make the decision about whether to purchase this class or not, that then there are other opportunities.
You may not have understood my question. Let's say this program didn't exist and the money was rolling straight into the Oregon
right.
Opportunity Grant. You get a call from an employer that I want to have this employee get some extra training at XYZ Community College. Could you refer them to the Oregon Opportunity Grant and say, I think that would cover it for you, give an opportunity to apply for a grant from them?
Representative Bates, Madam Chair, yes, we would. I mean, we would refer them to the...
I would like to note that in order to be eligible for an opportunity grant, a student has to be full-time. Isn't that correct?
That is correct.
So if a student is just taking a particular class or course, they would be eligible to use the Jobs Plus monies, but they would not be eligible for the opportunity grant.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, the individual needs to be seeking a degree. So if they were, as Kathleen Hines, the grants director, indicated yesterday, they use these for real estate licensing. They may take a word processing, a access class to improve their skills to help out their employer. That would not be covered by the Oregon Opportunity Grant. So they would need to be full-time. They'd need to be seeking a degree. So that specialized training that the Jobs Plus is targeted at, that it fills a niche, which would not be covered by the Oregon Opportunity Grant.
Unless you modify the Oregon Opportunity Grant.
That is correct.
Senator Gordon. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to urge this committee, through our chair, to, again, recognizing that we're not the policy committee, to seek that statutory change in this legislative session. These are funds that would be, that need to be used in the opportunity grant. So whatever we can do to put this on a fast track to get it, get the legislative piece taken care of this session, I encourage us to do that and would seek the chair's assistance in making sure that we make this a priority.
Thank you. Senator Mesery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you clarify for me the reason for the five-year delay?
Senator Messler, Madam Chair, it's in statute. That the 5 years, the statute says that the individual education accounts are available to the Jobs Plus employees 5 years after they leave the program.
And follow up, Madam Chair, do you know the background of that?
No, I don't.
Is there anyone that could find that out for
us? Well, you know, what it appears to me to be, I think that we have identified some funding here that's kind of languishing and could be used more efficiently than it is being used. And what I think may be a way to look at this, considering Senator Gordley's remarks, is perhaps under we should have a letter drafted that outlines the issue here and the opportunity to make the funding more efficiently available, and give it to the send a copy to the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House, and ask that they have this issue brought before a policy committee and addressed at the soonest opportunity.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the five-year time limit, there had always been discussion about this is something that you could give to your children. But it's not just for the Jobs Plus employee, that the people in the immediate family could use it. So this is something that the child could use to go to school as
Well, and I think that these are all issues that need to be discussed from the policy point of view. I mean, we seem to have put this extremely complex program in place here around a very small pot of money. And I do think that the whole thing would benefit very greatly from a hearing and an airing of the issues from a policy point of view, with the goal being to make some policy decisions about whether we're making the optimum use of the money, considering the original intent of the program. And this is not the venue to have that discussion, right, but it's an extremely valid discussion, I think. Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Bender, would you be so kind in all of your spare time to work on drafting of that letter?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we do have some very interesting conversations in this subcommittee. With that, is there any more information that we would like to ask Mr. Lehman to present us on the jobs issue? Otherwise, I think he probably has other things that he needs to do besides watching us. Thank you very much. Mr. Lehman. We appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to come and talk to us.
Thank you.
Mr. Bender, could you please continue to lead us through the work that we're doing on the OSAP?
Yes. Yesterday, you were working through the LFO recommendation document, which was distributed to you yesterday, the memo dated June 23rd. If any of you do not have that with you today, I do have some extra copies, so just let me know. Where you had gotten to yesterday was you had gotten to recommendation number 8, which is the nursing services program adjustment, where LFO was recommending a $200,000 reduction in funding. And what I've done is I've prepared some additional information to explain the funding of that program that I think will help explain this recommendation further. Before we go into that, I would just like to suggest that you work through the remainder of this memo in your meeting today. Recommendation 10, which is the a recommendation for a package 201 relating to the Aspire program, Madam Chair, you may want to consider actually taking that last, because that's related to Senate Bill 184, which you also have scheduled today, and you could probably be efficient to work on those both together.
I think that's an excellent suggestion.
Let me then distribute to you some information on the nursing services program and how that works and the relation to recommendation number 8. Thank you. This chart, which is labeled Nursing Services Program, shows how this program is working. Each of the rows that has a date on that, September 02, July 03, April 04, April 05, represents 1 year of awards. The only set of awards that have already been issued to date is the first row. So let's go through that. I just want to show what that first row is showing and then show what the other rows, what those numbers mean. But what happened was, this was a new program. It was established last session. And in September of 2002, the Student Assistance Commission awarded 8 nurses a total of $166,888 in benefits under the nursing services program. The way that the nursing services program works, again, is the benefit level is determined by the student debt or the student loans that the nurse has that they acquired during their nursing education. And for these particular 8 nurses, we have information on what the awards amounts were, and I can get that for you if you need that, but to give you some idea, they varied from a minimum of $3,500 to a maximum of a bit over $35,000. So these represented the student debt that was eligible to be repaid under this program.
Mr. Bender, what are the variables that account for that wide swing in awards? Is it the amount of tuition that they incurred?
It would include the amount of tuition and the amount that they borrowed. If, for example, someone was able to finance their education without borrowing a lot because they had other resources available to them, their loan would be smaller, and the amount that they would be eligible for repayment would consequently be smaller.
Was there an adjustment for where they went through a 2-year program or a 4-year program also?
I cannot answer that.
I guess that'd be a big factor also.
Yeah.
Probably.
Where did these nurses end up at?
The nurses, in order to be eligible, must serve in areas of critical nursing shortage as determined by the Office of Rural Health. Areas of critical nursing shortage, in my understanding, are most of the rural areas of the state. So it's not limited to frontier areas or areas of particularly low population density. But basically, my understanding is that this is outside of the major metropolitan areas and larger cities of the state. Under this program, a nurse can apply to receive this award, and the 8 that were awarded the award, this is how they will receive the award. They will receive a payment equal to 1/4 of whatever their total award amount was on September of 2003, so that will be this fall, if they are still working in that critical service area. So they had to be in that area to start off with to apply for the loan. If they're still there and working, I believe they have to be working at least half-time, then they receive 1/4 of that payment. If they're still working in September 2004, they receive the next quarterly payment. And they keep receiving this. The last payment that these individuals would receive would be on September of 2006. Assuming they are still eligible and still in employment in a critical shortage area. What this first row then shows is what the payments will be for all 8 nurses combined, assuming that none of them become ineligible during the 4-year period. If they're all working there, we know that the payments will be $41,722 in September of each of those years. And that's how to read this row. The next row is the next set of awards. These were the commission had intended to issue the second year of awards last April, but they have held off because of the state's budget situation. They don't know whether they're going to have funding for this program or not. There's some concern. So they are holding off, and assuming if you do end up passing a budget that reflects the co-chair's budget, where this program is continued to be funded, they would presumably issue these awards in July. And the first payment would be in July of 2004, and you can see what the amounts are. So in the second year, the awards, I believe there were 8 again, but maybe there were 7, I don't know that. But the award total, was slightly less than it was the first year.
Would you like to come forward and just help us out with pieces of information here?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Oh, God, yeah.
Help us out.
For the record, my name is Kathleen Hines. I'm the Director of the Grants and Scholarships Division at the Oregon Student Assistance Commission.
Thank you. Mr. Bender, please continue.
The amount of funding that is in the governor's budget for this program, and I did distribute to you another sheet just now, which is Oregon Student Assistance Commission special payments. These are the student financial payments in the governor's budget that are paid primarily from general fund, but for the opportunity grant, there are other funds as well. If you look at the line for the nursing services program, which is the bottom, you can see that there is $369,670 in that particular budget, in this budget for that program. If you switch back to the table we were just looking at, however, you can see that the amount of funding that will be needed is considerably less than that in the 2003-2005 biennium, and that is the reason for recommendation number 8. What recommendation number 8 says is that you adopt an understanding that this program is going to be funded at its existing levels through this biennium. What we would then project is that the agency, I believe, wishes to grant these awards in April, so sort of toward the end of the school year, they can offer awards to nurses who are considering employment in different areas. Under the LFO recommendation, if you assume that they have a total of $180,000 to award in each of the 2 Aprils that remain in the 2003-2005 biennium, you can see what the commitments become and how long they spread out for. But the actual costs, if the agency does that in 2003-2005, if you look at the 2003-2005 column, is about $160,000. So it's about $200,000 less than the $360,000 in the governor's budget. That is where we are recommending, or why we are recommending, that reduction. We understand that this allows the program to continue at its current rates. If you look at the 2005-2007 number, you can see that because this program is phasing in, even if no additional awards were allowed at all in the 2005-2007 biennium, the state's commitment would be about $330,000. There was a question yesterday, I believe, that could the Scholarship Commission award more awards under the existing amount in the governor's budget than they are under the LFO recommendation? And the answer is yes. They could increase the number of awards, probably not for July 2003, because I think they've already, you know, had all of those applications. But they could certainly award more awards in 2004 and 2005. In fact, anything that they award in April 2005 doesn't cost anything in the 2003-2005 biennium, So they could really up the awards in in April 04 to a much higher level. Just note, though, that that would be a program expansion, and that next biennium, instead of it being $330,000, it would be much higher than that.
Senator Mazzarelli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe we've covered this in the past, and I'm just not retaining all the information, but I'd like to get a sense of how much demand there is for this program.
Yeah, that's my question, too.
Oh, you're psychic today, Senator.
Senator Mazzarelli, Madam Chair, I don't have the exact figures. I can get them within a couple minutes of, but I know we have more applicants than we can award. And what the exact difference is, I'm not 100% sure, but I can get that for you.
If I could follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
I think that's an important question, because if there is not the demand there, that would tell me that the program is not working, and is it even worth continuing to fund?
Well, I think there
it is a new program, I understand.
Yeah, there is, I think, a dynamic at work here that this is a new program. And
I'm sorry.
I would imagine that the level of applications that you get to the program is somewhat impacted by the fact that it's new, and that there may not be the degree of awareness out there in the nursing field or the medical field that this is an opportunity that's available to people.
Madam Chair, when this program shifted from the loan repayment program to a loan forgiveness program, we did do outreach, and the Oregon Nursing Services Board, the Board of Nursing, also did an extensive newsletter and outreach to nursing students and nurses out in the field. So, but I think you're right. I think there's going to be as the program continues and the word gets out there, that we will have even more applicants for it.
So, Senator, did you have a follow-up? Representative Smith.
Thank you. So we're talking, we have, and if I want to get this straight, we have $200,000 left over that isn't used. Is that where this 200,000 figure comes from? And why is that left over if it is? And I would think there would be a need out there that could be awarded to some nurses in these rural communities, because we have such a huge shortage of nurses and obviously for care in rural areas too. So I don't understand why we have this money left over.
Well, we did have a very brief discussion yesterday about why that was being held back, and perhaps you could go over that again.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, and members of the committee, Representative Bates nailed it yesterday when he was talking about it's a program that's coming up to speed. If this program were fully implemented and we were awarding eight every year, we could tell you with a fair degree of certainty that it'll cost you this much this biennium, and it'll be about the same next biennium. But because we are growing it, we're in the growth stages, as Steve indicated, we could obligate that $200,000 today. But if you look here, the $161,000 that we would spend based upon committing those monies turns into a $329,000 obligation next legislative session. And we can do that, but the point is, I just want you to be mindful that we are doing that, and because we're making commitments to individuals who are placing themselves out in the rural areas.
Okay, and I would also ask the committee to be mindful of the roll-up implications, the actual commitment roll-up implications that the program will be incurring in the budget situation that we're in.
Well,
follow-up, Representative Smith.
That's why I'm hesitant on taking this $200,000 out of it, because we do have these roll-ups for the next session. In addition, we'll have increased awareness and the continued demand. Are we grabbing this money because it's there and we're going to put it some other place, I'm assuming? I'm not too keen on that idea. If there's something else motivated behind this, maybe we should know. But if I'm just looking at the nursing services program, I'm not wholly excited about doing that. But like I say, Madam Chair, if there's another reason behind this that you need to discuss, let's go there. But
sure.
If I'm just looking at this by itself, I don't want to do it.
Ms. Hunt.
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, I did get that figure from the staff, and there are 80 applications waiting for consideration for 2003-2004.
80. 80. Okay. That says right there. Representative Bates.
My question would be just slightly different than Senator Mezzoli's. This program is designed to attract nurses to come to rural area and stay. There's lots of factors that make those nurses stay there. The biggest one being, did they come from that community in the first place, mm-hmm. got their training, and went back to the community?
Mm-hmm.
We've seen programs like this before in the medical field where a person will go into an area for 3 or 4 years, get the loans repaid, and then leave when that time is up, especially true of physicians, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
What we find that makes people stay in those areas is getting roots in those areas,
mm-hmm.
and recovering those loans for them is important. So the real question in my mind is not how many applications you have, it's how many people stick, and how many people go to those areas that wouldn't have gone otherwise. And that's a question you can't answer right now.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't expect you to. And I'm not asking you to. I would ask you to think about that, though, when you mm-hmm. look at these things and say to yourselves, is this person actually going to stay in that area? What's the likelihood they're going to stay? And would they have gone there anyway? Because the number of applicants doesn't really mean very much. If I was from a rural part of Oregon and went to school, got my education, was planning to go home, and the money was available, I'm going to take it. I mean, why not? But that's not what the program is designed for. It's designed to bring people in. And so that's the question that needs to be answered. The other question I have is putting sideboards on this. Just awarding grants based on the bill that's been run up at school, I think is inappropriate. You need some sideboards saying we're going to award this much as a max per year per student or nurse coming out. Just have an open situation where you might be awarding one person $30,000 or $40,000 to come back to an area, another person award $2,000 or $3,000 doesn't make any sense to me. You should have some max on this, and you may have that in place, but I worry about that because that limits the number of people you can actually impact. So you may have those mm-hmm. in place, but I haven't heard that you do, and the range that we're just given is somewhat concerning to me.
Can you talk to the committee about how you decide the level of awards? What are the sideboards on the program in that area?
Chair Morgan and members of the committee, I would have to review the – I have a staff person who does this work, and I'd have to review the rules again to really give you an articulate answer to exactly how we make that decision. I know we have a committee that decides, that selects the awardees, and we do it, on based on their loan amount. But up to a max, I believe we do have up to a maximum amount. I'll just have to double-check that. And I did want to indicate, too, that we were requested to do a budget note on program usage, which we prepared. And there it is a combination. The idea was recruitment more than retention, the issue you were addressing, Representative Bates. Of course, long term, we have no information on whether it caused them to set down roots and stay there. But it was a little bit about an equal mix of retention, someone who's already serving in a rural area who took advantage of the program. Now, whether that was enough to keep them there and they would have been leaving anyway, we have no way of knowing. But there was a combination of recruitment and retention.
It doesn't make a difference.
As long as they
stay. Yeah.
Madam Chair. Senator Gordon.
Thank you. I raised the question on yesterday about the $200,000, and I agree with the concern that Representative Smith is raising, and I'm not sure. Did you get a response to the question that you asked?
Not really.
Didn't hear a response either.
Not really.
And I don't know that we heard it yesterday either, which is why the issue keeps coming back.
Yeah. I need to be satisfied on my question. Why are we taking this money out of the program?
It is an LFO recommendation, so please let me respond to that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
The reason why we are recommending this is we looked at the program to see how much it would cost. And in order to determine how much it would cost, we looked at the history of awards that were awarded in September and the proposed awards that were originally proposed for April but now have been delayed. And we extrapolated and said, well, assuming that that same level of activity continues at that rate, allowing for some increase in award amounts so that the total would be perhaps 180,000 instead of the 160,000 that we saw the first year, how much would it actually cost in 2003-2004? And basically, this spreadsheet shows our calculation that the program would cost $161,000. That compared to $360,000 in the governor's budget. So we recommended this reduction. The amount that's in the governor's budget, we have to be careful about, say, directing the agency to spend all of that in awards, because if you start looking at this, if they start increasing their award levels, they can increase it by a huge amount and not have a very big impact on this biennium. In order to have a $200,000 increase this biennium, they're going to have to probably, I would guess, though I would ask more time to look at this over because this is sort of off the cuff, but I think they would increase their award levels by about five times the rate. Mm-hmm. And then the 2005-2007 number cost, instead of it being 300,000, is going to be very large indeed. And it's a concern to us.
Well, it's a concern to me. I'm not saying take the $200,000 and award it. I'm saying why can't it stay there, because I see your calculation on your roll-up cost to be used for that, to make the program viable. And so when we come in for the next session, that we're not scrambling to find general fund dollars to fund this, to fund the continued awards that were made in the 2001-2003.
Well, is that an option?
If I could just respond to that, because I think that if you are going to set that standard for this program, you're on a real slippery slope, because you can make the same argument for virtually every program that every budget committee is going to look at, because there's roll-up aspects to them and there are commitment aspects to them too. So clearly what the charge is that we have in the Ways and Means process in this session, given the constraints that we have on general fund, is to be very, very careful and very thoughtful about the money that we leave in programs and the money that we take out of programs. I think we have a clear indication here that if the commission continues down the path that they've charted for themselves, there will be an extra $200,000 in the program, and that the program in the 2005-2007 biennium will have a very clear level of commitment and indebtedness to it that can be addressed in the 2005-2007 biennium. And so in terms of having budgets be clear and be straightforward, I think that we need to be very careful about the policy issue that we're unleashing here by allowing this little pocket of money to be carried forward in this program when the policy has not been to take that position in the other programs and budgets.
I understand that philosophy. We're in very difficult times. And with that in mind, it's very hard to plan long-term. And when it comes to our education programs, the long-term planning is probably more essential than it is in maybe some of our other social programs on the other Ways and Means Committee I sit on. I'm not trying to put one above the other by saying that. But education is a process and a long-term commitment of funds, because education takes 4 years or 2 years down the road. I think this program is a little bit different maybe than some of the others. Now, I'm not trying to be headstrong and in this, but I think we maybe need to look at this program a little bit differently, because of the long-term structure. And you could make that argument about a lot of other programs we have in this state. For instance, Oregon Project Independence. We have no long-term structure or vision of what that's going to be. I'm just expressing a little bit of frustration here in that because of our severe budget times we're in, it's like we're so focused on balancing this budget, we can't take a look at it's forcing us not to look long-term.
Well, I don't agree with that very respectfully, Representative Smith, because we clearly are looking at what the program is being indebted to in the long term. And I think that we clearly are making a commitment to fund that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't agree that we aren't making provisions for this program to be funded in the future.
Okay. That's fine. Thank you very much.
Representative Bates.
Can I move my seat? What is this, the $200,000 reduction is that actually reduce the number of nurses who will be served the next, I mean, it's sort of an annual program basically.
Mm-hmm.
You've got 8 nurses now, you could plan to add 8 next year again, have a total of 16 rolling through.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the program you have some neighbor of 25-30 nurses, and some dropping off one end, some picking up the other. Was that your vision of this program?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Representative Bates, if I might speak to that, that is correct. At some point in time, we would be serving consistently 8 every year. The original idea that we had on the nursing services program was to model it after our rural health services program, and in that piece, the legislature gives us the money, and we move it into a rural health services fund. And we make awards on an annual basis that takes into account what Representative Smith has alluded to, is it allows us to make sure that those monies are there when it comes time to pay. But it's when we get to the next legislative session that new infusion of money allows us to make new awards and continue this process. So at some point in time, It stabilizes, and unless the legislature wants to grow the number of awards, and then that it would be an option. I don't know if that makes sense, but by having a fund that we move these monies into, we can make the awards, and we can know that it's paid for this biennium when we make the decision to make those awards, and we're not coming back next legislative session, as this chart shows that. We're committing $161,000 this biennium, but the price tag goes to $329,000. So my concern is the unintended consequences of only looking at it from a two-year perspective. It just there's a slingshot effect here.
Madam Chair. Representative Bates, did you have a question?
Well, yeah, this is something you should be able to model financially and get an idea. Which, if you put some sideboards on it,
mm-hmm.
so you know how much you're awarding per applicant, you should be able to model what that's going to look like ramped up all the way and where you're going to end up out in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you, when you commit money at this level, when you're ramping up, we should have an idea where we're really going with this thing and not be just sort of shooting from our hip here, figuring out, well, where we might be mm-hmm. in 2005, 2007. Yeah, and that's what I'm not hearing here. I mean, I'm just not hearing a clear declaration of these are our sideboards, 8 people this year, it's 8 people next year, it's 8 people here, 8 people here, and at that point we're rolling through. And that would give us an idea of what we're committing to 2005-2007 to, because right now I really don't know if we're taking 200,000 in or out does as far as 2005-2007 absolutely can mean. It could be much higher than this figure. If you put the 200,000 in, you kept ramping the program up as far as number of applicants and what you're going to spend on each applicant. It seems to me that's something that you can model that and give us an idea of what it is, but you have to put some sideboards on what each applicant's going to get and how many applicants you want to have.
Mr. Bender, could you take us through the part of the LFO recommendation that deals with the roll-up in the number of scholarships or the number of people that are enrolled in the program?
And I'd like to ask that question as well.
Oh, Madam please.
Are you in agreement with the LFO recommendation?
If we're only looking at it from this biennium perspective, yes. But I get back to the point, if... if you want to continue making awards, new awards in the future, this $329,000 in 05-07 is assuming that at some point in time you're not able to make any more awards. I believe that's correct.
I don't agree with that, and I would like Mr. Bender to outline the assumptions.
If you look at our memo on page 4, item 8, which is the one that we're looking at, the recommendation we are now looking at, the first half of that is basically just a description of how the program works. But if you start looking about halfway through that, where you see the bolded language, I'll just read that to you. We're recommending that the subcommittee reduce the general fund appropriation to the grants and scholarships program area and special payments for the nursing services program by $200,000 to provide funding levels to continue awards at levels awarded in the 2002-03 fiscal year. That's the September one where they've already been awarded.
Okay.
The adjusted budget is projected to finance approximately 24 new awards. That's the 8 per year for the other three rows in this chart, including approximately 8 held over from the spring and 8 existing awards during the 2003-05 biennium. So it would take these, basically there would be 24 awards altogether plus the 8 that have already been issued.
Mm-hmm.
That was what would be financed. The new awards made during the 2003-05 biennium will have commitments that will require general fund in the 2005-07, 2007-09 biennia. This chart actually shows what those commitment amounts are estimated to be. These aren't exact numbers, but these are estimates of what those will be. The issue of providing them more general fund now so that they can hold on to it next biennium is not available to them. General fund that is not spent reverts at the end of the biennium. So that is not an option.
Okay.
We only need the $161,000. Also, in terms of making commitments, this what we would see is in the 05 budget request, they would have, there's always an item for phase-in costs, and we would see an amount for phase-in of approximately $160,000 or so, or $170,000, if these numbers turn out to be correct, to show the costs of the fact that this is a new program and it's still phasing in, and eventually at this rate, it would stabilize at about $350,000 or so. Maybe you would increase that for inflation. You'd make decisions as to, well, maybe instead of 8, we want to do it at 12 per year, or we want to cut it back to 3 per year. But this program would eventually stabilize at a level like that. In many cases, the legislature makes decisions where we know there are going to be costs in the future. A primary case would be debt service, where you're issuing bonds, and we know that there are going to be costs in the future, but we, of course, don't pay all of the 20-year debt service right away. We just know that it's going to cost this much, this biennium, this much, that biennium. So we think that this is similar to that in the sense that we're just financing the amount that they would spend this biennium if they kept the program at the level that they have it now, 8 per year.
3%
of fixed.
You said it would stabilize at about how much per year? You kind of
I think about 350 or 360. You see, in that 2005-07, they would also have another year. These are just the existing commitments, but they would continue to be awarding, and they would have about another $45,000 from next biennium. So the actual cost in 2005-07, if they are allowed to continue the program, would be higher than that 330. I think it would be about 375.
And looking at this from the point of view of ramping up the program, in 2006-07, they should have about 32 people into the program at the present rate. So that's where you'd stabilize, and that's where you think you'd end up at about 350, 360.
Yeah, about 32 people,
so,
yeah.
So when we say we're taking $200,000 out, we understand they can't carry the money forward. And in 2005-07, we will have a roll-up cost above what we have here.
Exactly.
But we can do this and maintain the program.
Yeah.
Knowing that in 2005-07, as the program stabilizes, we'll have to have a higher commitment. And if, when we sign those people up, we have a contractual arrangement, individual with them, that we have to honor.
I think we can do.
Yes. I mean, they'll,
Chair Morgan, Representative Bates, members of the committee, I agree with everything you say. And I just did some quick penciling, and it is about the $375,000 a biennium.
That's about it. So we're committing the next legislature to this money.
Yeah.
Because it's a four-year program, we're in a two-year budget, but we can take the $200,000 out without hurting the program. Roll it forward, knowing that we've committed the next legislative assembly to that kind of money on a contractual basis with these nurses.
Keeping 32 in the pipeline.
Yeah, 30. You'll have 32 steady state. Some dropping off. Some coming on board after 06-07.
That's correct.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, yes. I always like it when I can just say yes or no.
Yeah. I try to summarize sometimes, but it takes my thick head a while to figure
no,
out.
No, we appreciate it.
I'm much more comfortable with
Thank
where
you.
We are.
Thank you, Mr. Bender, for that explanation. Are there any more questions or concerns relating to the LFO recommendation for the adjustment in the nursing services program?
What I appreciate, Madam Chair, is that we have had the opportunity and we've taken some patience to process this piece.
Yeah.
Was really necessary.
Well, and I think that that is one of the strengths of the committee, that everybody will hang in on the question lines until we get the information that we need. And we've lost our quorum, I see, so we can't actually take a motion here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing us to go through this, too.
And I especially like Representative Smith's question, because maybe think through this thing better.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So let's go ahead then and talk about the organization realignment, and then we'll come back and do a motion on this when we have our quorum back.
Madam Chair, in the budget development for this agency, the governor includes a package 100.
We would like to have a motion to, let me just say the chair would accept a motion to have the committee accept the nursing service program adjustment recommendation from LFO.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Smith has made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. Mr. Bender.
LFO recommends that you approve Package 100 in the Governor's Balanced Budget Proposal. Package 100 is simply an internal shifting of funds between the divisions of the agency. The agency has gone through an internal reorganization during the course of this current biennium, and the Governor's package, essentially what it is doing is it's shifting five positions from the Loan and Information Technology divisions to the Administration Division and Policy and Research section. What Package 100 does is it coordinates the budget's amounts between divisions with where the employees are actually located now in the agency's organization charts. There is no net impact on the total expenditures or on position counts of this package. It's just realigning it to the agency's current organization. So we would recommend that you approve that package.
The discussion on the motion
and
or
it's
on
okay
the recommendation?
With the agency, obviously.
So this doesn't involve any more or less money. This just reassigns positions in departments within the agency.
Mr. Sweets, are you okay with that?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, yes, that is our option package.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move approval of Package 100.
We have the motion. Representative Smith, would you go and call our Senator Measurely so we can move this one? We have a motion to accept the LFO recommendation on the organization realignment in Package 100. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. Mr. Bender, let's move on to 11.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With your indulgence, I'll just talk about 11 and 12 together.
Fine.
These are two packages, Package 300 and 400. Package 300 was a request by the agency to expand, the FFELP is the acronym for the Federal Student Loan Guarantee Program, to expand that program. They had believed, they had requested two additional positions and other funds expenditure limitation to pay for those persons. We have had discussions with the agency since then, and they have chosen to withdraw the request for this package. So we, of course, are recommending that you deny it, since they are no longer technically still there. So we're recommending that you actually go through the process of denying it. But note that they have withdrawn that request since the governor's balanced budget was submitted. In package 400 was similar in the sense that they were seeking an extra position in their information services division, along with other funds expenditure authority to pay for that individual. What they are doing is they're in a situation where some of their software programs are out of date, and they're looking at alternatives to update and maintain them. We think that they need to review this a bit more, and if they really do think that they need someone, they can come back to the emergency board at that time. So we're requesting that you deny package 400 and 300.
And the agency is in agreement with the LFO recommendations on both of these packages?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes.
Thank you. Discussion from the committee members?
Do I need to get the good senator?
You could do that. Chair would accept a motion to approve the LFO recommendation on package 300 and package 400.
So moved, Madam Chair.
The motion has been made. Is there discussion on the motion?
We just yell vote.
Is there objection to the motion? Hearing no objection, the motion is carried. Mr. Bender.
Item 13 is just, we're asking you to note something here. LFO requests that the subcommittee acknowledge that LFO will work with the Department of Administrative Services to correct fund balance amounts and revenues in the commission budget. These adjustments will not affect the appropriations or expenditure limitations that you're adopting, but will improve the accuracy of data in the agency's budget documentation. This is a similar, or identical, I should say, to a request that we asked you to consider for the Department of Higher Education budget. This does not affect what the agency can spend at all, and this is technically not something that you are really voting on, in the sense that it never shows up in House Bill 5052. Okay. But we would ask you to acknowledge that and make clear the authority of LFO to work with DAS to make sure that those fund balance numbers and revenues that are in the state's budget system match what's in the state's accounting system.
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Bender, is this an issue of two different accounting systems that don't talk to each other, the same issue that we have with Orbitz and the...
Yes, this is that same issue. However, the Orbitz section did not request that you specifically address that in your budget report for this agency, because there weren't the extent of the issues that were for higher ed. But that's essentially the source of this problem. And hopefully, as Orbitz works, as all agencies work with Orbitz, we won't see this type of problem in the future. Okay.
Senator Mesley has been called into a meeting down in LFO, so he's requested that we just discuss these issues and then stack them up and get them in here at the end and move all the motions. So are there any, is there anyone want to raise any issues on the LFO recommendation or make any objections to it? Let's go ahead and talk about the private award program.
The private award program is the program where donors provide funds that the scholarship commission, I'm sorry, that the Student Assistance Commission then distributes to students. And the commission, essentially uses some of those donation funds for its own administrative expenses. We are recommending that the subcommittee instruct the agency to seek to maximize the amount of donor funds that are distributed to students, both in terms of the amount of awards that they are, the amount of donors that they are able to get into the program, and also to minimize the amount of funds that they need to retain in order to administer the program, so that as much as possible can be distributed to students.
Questions?
Well, it sounds like there's a problem.
Madam Chair, members, Senator Gordon, members of the committee, that is what we attempt to do on an ongoing basis, and that we're in the process of evaluating that.
Okay. Then if there are no objections to this, then I think we should move back to the Aspire program and move into the deliberations on Senate Bill 184.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is now recommendation number 10 for the Aspire program. This is a package in the budget that's related to Senate Bill 184, but is not entirely dependent on that, and that'll be made clear as we discuss this. If I may ask you to look at some of the materials that we've distributed to you this morning relating to Senate Bill 184, which you have scheduled for public hearing and work session today. And those materials, I can't find my own set, so I hope.
Can I
here we are. There's a set of materials that start with the bill and then continue on with some additional information. This bill has a... What this bill does, as it's introduced, is it does two things. It puts the Aspire program into statute. That is, it specifies this as one of the this program as one of the functions of the agency. It also establishes a separate fund account to handle the funds for this particular agency. It has an interesting legislative history. It was introduced at the request of the commission, and it was referred by the Senate president to Senate Education with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. The Senate Education Committee approved this without amendment and asked the Senate president to rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. The president and the president pro tem refused to rescind that, and the bill came to you, and that was a very good decision because there are some, you know, funding problems. We need some amendments on this bill, some Ways and Means type amendments to make it work right. This, the material that I've distributed to you includes a staff measure summary that was prepared by the Senate Education Committee. It includes a fiscal impact statement, and it includes a one-page description that I've prepared for you on this particular Aspire program. So you may want to look at that. That's the page that has the math on it, which shows the Aspire sites. But what the Aspire program is first of all, it's been in operation since 1998, even though it's not specifically in statute. And it's an acronym for the Access to Student Assistance Programs in Reach of Excellence.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I should have a copy somewhere. I don't know where it is.
In Reach of Excellence or Everyone?
Everyone, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Everyone. And what it does is it provides mentoring and resources that help students access education and training after high school.
You have two of these for some reason.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
I didn't steal it. I just happened to have two.
And options for paying for post-secondary education. You can see on the map the sites where Aspire is operating, the high schools where Aspire is operating currently. The way the program works is that the program trains volunteers and school staff to become Aspire advisors. And the Aspire advisors then serve the student bodies at these high schools. They do not focus specifically on high-achieving students or at-risk students at the high schools. They work to assist all students in giving them more information about their post-secondary options. I'm now down to the second bullet after the map, below the map. It's a program that's totally funded from donations, grants, including a federal AmeriCorps grant as part of it, and payments by high schools that are participating. This commission has operated the program with limited duration positions since its establishment in 1998. So every time the program is continued, or they wish to continue the program, It comes forward in the form of a policy option package. That's what happens when a program is funded and limited by a limited duration. I know that the legislature has established this program on a limited duration basis for a couple biennium now because the funding source is entirely from donations. And it's never clear whether these donations are going to be long-lasting or not. So they have continuously approved this on a limited duration basis. This is where Package 201 in the agency's budget comes in. Package 201 in the agency's budget, which we are recommending that you approve, would change these positions to permanent positions, would provide the funding for them, which is monies that the agency is already spending and would have been in the base budget, except for the fact that this is a limited duration. It had been approved on a limited duration program. We just believe that, after 5 years, this is a program that seems to have some legs. And what the bill does is it puts it in statute. What Package 201 does is it essentially creates it as part of the permanent functions of the agency. And it's as permanent as anything else is that an agency does. A future legislature could cut a program, but it would just be part of its base budget. A couple other things to note is that Package 201 not only makes the existing Aspire positions permanent, there are three of them at the agency now, but it does add two new permanent positions. So you'll probably want to hear from the agency why they need those. Senate Bill 184, as I mentioned before, grants the specific statutory authority for OSAC to operate the Aspire program, which is probably not a bad idea if you want them to do this, to put that in statute. And it does establish a separate fund. OSAC had asked for general fund to supplement the Aspire program, but the governor denied this request, and it is not before you in the budget. Finally, we are recommending that Senate Bill 185, if you choose to move this bill, that you do amend it. And we've distributed a copy of amendments, -1 amendments, which unfortunately we've changed since then with further discussion from the agency, but since subcommittees adopt amendments conceptually anyway for the full committee, what we are trying to do is make three changes from Senate Bill 184. Senate Bill 184 says that the new fund that is being established for this program can receive appropriation monies. We are asking that you remove the term appropriations. In the amendments themselves, those are the amendments in lines 9 and 10, or I'm sorry, in lines 8 and 9. Mm-hmm. The reason why is there are no general fund appropriations anticipated for this program in this budget. And in the future, if at some point in the future the legislature does choose to add general fund for this program, they can do that. And there's no need for the money to go into this fund. You can just appropriate it directly to the agency. So we think we would recommend that you take the word appropriations out to clarify that there are no appropriations, that they're not at this time an intent to put in appropriations, and that actually the fund doesn't need to hold the appropriations anyway. The second change that we would request is that you clearly indicate that the fund can accept contributions and funds from administrative charges, because that language is not in Senate Bill 184, and the agency expects contributions and administrative charges to schools to help finance this program. So this would allow that. And finally, Senate Bill 184, because this program has been operating since 1998, there are some monies now that they have in contributions for this program that have not been spent yet. Since this establishes a separate fund for the program, which is advisable, we are asking that you add language to Senate Bill 184 to allow OSEC to transfer the balances that it has for the program now into this new fund so they can have a clean accounting system and all their monies for Aspire that they have now or that they get in the future will be held in the fund that's established in 184.
Questions or comments?
Madam Chair. Steve, how much money comes into the program from the school districts that flows back into the program that acts as the program for its services?
My understanding is that the plan is to increase the amount of funds that are coming from the source. I can look this up in the budget book, or if there's someone from the agency who is prepared to just answer that, that would be fine for me.
Madam Chair and representative base members of the committee, I don't have that answer, but I will ask staff to come up and respond.
And the other question is, the AmeriCorps funding seems to be dropping. Is there some reason for that?
Well, they didn't get all the money that they had applied for.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Vicki Merkel, the Aspire Program Manager for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. Next year will be the first year that school districts will provide a small cash contribution to Aspire, and that's directly related to the placement of an AmeriCorps member to assist in the program development of Aspire at that school. The school has the choice to request an AmeriCorps member or not. They request a member, the fee, or the, I call it a small cash contribution, is $2,750 for a full-time member, $1,825 for a half-time member. As you indicated, the AmeriCorps grant is less than expected because the federal AmeriCorps program has accounting issues and a dispute between the GAO and the OMB that's currently being negotiated and resolved. We had competed for a national competitive grant, which would have awarded Aspire 33 FTE because of the issues that are rather similar to what you were discussing with the jobs program. It's related to encumbrances of education awards for AmeriCorps members. We were not awarded a competitive grant. We have competed successfully for a state formula grant and been awarded the potential of up to 13 FTE. Those FTE slots can be converted, some of them to halftime, but I don't know how many. So depending on how many actual AmeriCorps slots, that would affect the total dollars that we would receive from school districts requesting an AmeriCorps member. Schools do not pay a fee or provide a contribution for the Aspire program itself. We have tried to make this program available to the schools that apply and compete for it without any charge to the school. They do have expenses related to the program in that they have to assign a staff person to be the site supervisor, and they have to provide working space and internet access for the volunteer mentors.
Yeah, ma'am, I'm just trying to get a grip on what the program is. Again, I'll go back to my experience as a school board member. One of our great problems was juniors and seniors getting ready to go on to education and not knowing what was available. A huge problem trying to find out scholarships, grants, loans. And we set up an Eagle Center and dedicated a staff member, not a non-teacher, a room just for that purpose about 7 or 8 years ago. That person got pretty well educated in how to do this sort of thing, but what it sounds to me like is the Aspire program will come in and help train those people and help maintain those programs at the site level so that students have an area to go to find out what's available to them. It's my understanding of what the program does. But what I'm also hearing from you is that you can't service every high school in the state right now, even if you got all your grant money.
No.
And so the high schools, or I assume it's high school level, have to compete for these programs.
That's correct. And Madam Chair and Representative Bates, we actually go one step farther than the traditional career center model that I think you've just described, where you are staffing it either with paid staff or cadre of volunteers and students drop in. The Aspire model actually assigns an adult, trained adult volunteer to the student who requests it. So that you know I'm your volunteer, I'm your person, I know you, we talk about your interest areas, and I follow you through. We have almost 500 volunteers who are trained and working at 39 schools presently. So we're finding that volunteers not only come forward, but we have over a 50% retention rate. The difference in the model that it makes is that career centers traditionally do a very good job of providing services to the motivated student. We're trying to reach the student who, for a number of reasons, feel that post-secondary education is not an option for them. Their parents didn't go to college, so there's no one at home saying, this is something that you can do. They feel they don't have the money to go, or they're from a culture or population that traditionally is not are non-attenders. So by not being just for high-achieving or at-risk youth who may get other services, we're trying to reach those kids in the middle who might go by the door of the Career Center but never go in. And the way we do that is assign an adult volunteer. One of our model programs was the North Bend Naggers, and that probably describes a lot of what the volunteers' activities are, reminders, what are the timelines. We also, our intent is to start serving freshmen, the students who, as soon as they enter the high school. We're also part of the OUS Gear Up program, which is beginning post-secondary access programs in the middle school.
Follow up?
Just for clarity, Frank, the center we set up did those things. I mean, that was the idea, was to get the kids that it's a system that has a very low-income population, and that was why it was set up. So it was just a matter of confusion. So you basically, this program basically trains volunteers to go into the sites to help facilitate those programs. Is that correct? Well, that's what you just said.
We train the volunteers to mentor individual students. They have a up 1-to-15 ratio of volunteer per student. They see the student at school with school staff present, and they take them through the whole process of defining their career interest, what types of post-secondary education will meet that interest, and accessing financial assistance. Our goal is to, of course, reduce the amount of indebtedness for students. So the Aspire staff provide the training, technical assistance, and curriculum materials to do that for the volunteers. And frankly, in some communities, it's also for the staff. So.
Does this lead you to more questions?
I just want to get a good understanding of the program.
Yeah, I think you're doing a good job.
Are the volunteers usually staff members or a mixture of staff members?
Oh, no.
Or both?
No, the staff members, what I was alluding to is some schools, which was surprising to me, some high schools don't have career centers set up. And they may or may not have a school counselor. Most high schools do, but in these economic times, they don't always have a counselor who's trained. So that we're actually bringing training to the staff also. But 98% of the time, we're training adult volunteers. The volunteers tend to be parents of current students, either at the high school or middle school level, because obviously they see the information is going to benefit their family by learning it. Retired educators love this program. I think it's because they probably, you know, it's what they intended to do, is help kids better themselves and the future generations, communities, et cetera. And then the third group that I see are people like myself, working professionals who were the first in their family to graduate from college. Go, boy, that made a difference. Maybe I can share this information with someone else.
Representative Smith.
The addition of two FTEs, they will become state employees.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, committee members, yes.
So they will be on the retirement and benefit package.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, yes.
And that will be a roll-up cost to our general fund?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, no. Okay. This is all other funds.
But it will be roll-up costs to the PEB program.
Correct.
I just want to say something here. The last package in the nursing program where we took $200,000 out because we couldn't afford to do that. Now we're adding some FTE to this, which could impact the future general fund, or the funding of our medical benefits and for this program. I'm just making an observation, Madam Chair, and I will support this package, but I...
the program's been in place since 1998. Are you doing any kind of data gathering about how effective this is at keeping students in, having them complete post-secondary education?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, we've done... an extensive evaluation process every year. The first 3 years, my task was to develop a pilot program. The program is designed to be implemented in a variety of schools, so we had to see if we could develop a design that would work as well in Myrtle Point as it would at Roosevelt High School in Portland, for example. And the first 3 years of the evaluation were mainly program design focused. Now we're moving towards outcomes-based evaluation with the help of the Policy and Research Division at the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. Because of lack of funding, I have used graduate-level interns to work on the evaluation process. We're also going to be working closely with Oregon University Systems, who gather statistics for where do students in Oregon go. There are some timing problems that make it very difficult to gather this kind of collection, and I have a team of experts who are helping me figure out how to do this. Because what we know, and those of you may have seen this yourself if you've worked in the schools, where students say they're going in the spring is not necessarily where they attend in the fall. So I can gather the data that says where students are telling us that they're going to attend in the fall, but what we really need to find out is where they actually went. So the best source of data for that is Oregon University Systems, although Aspire does assist students to go to private universities, community colleges, and technical vocational schools. The limited data that we have, what we're seeing is that we are influencing college attending rates for the mid-range GPA students and minority students. We're seeing an upward trend in that. We are seeing more students applying and receiving OSAC scholarships at schools with Aspire programs than without. We also have an unintended outcome that students who are not mentored are also receiving information and being impacted because Aspire is in the school building, enhancing current career centers. Maybe a friend gets a scholarship application of a mentored student. Turns out the friend becomes the scholarship recipient, that sort of thing. So.
Mr. Bender, can you talk to the committee about the exposure to the general fund of this program?
This program has been entirely donation-supported since its inception. There is no direct general fund exposure currently or in the future. Any decision to add general fund to this program would be the decision of either this or a future legislative assembly.
What about the issue related to health care coverage and retirement benefits?
Well, the health care coverage will be paid, the insurance premiums will be paid from the donation and grant funds for these employees while they are working. To the extent that these employees build up retirement benefits during their tenure here with this program, the contributions to the retirement system for them during the time that they are working here will be also entirely paid for by the donation, grant, other funds.
Thank you very much. What I would like to do is have a discussion around the additional two positions that you're asking for and what you plan to do with these people and why you see them as being necessary to be added.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if I might describe the staffing pattern for the concept for the program next year. As we grow, we shift and change design. It started with just me. I used to say Aspire Party of One, but now I can't do that anymore. I would continue as the administrator program manager, doing the management task for the majority of the grant seeking. I am the team leader for the staff, and I also will work directly with schools that if you look at your map and envision a small slice between McMinnville and Cottage Grove across the state, I will be assigned to those schools, providing Aspire training and technical assistance. Caddy McEwen is our Aspire supervisor from Coos Bay, and she is the Southern Regional Supervisor. So below that slice in the middle, she will provide training and technical assistance to the schools in her region. Her position is funded by a grant from the Ford Family Foundation. a northern region supervisor, again, the top of the middle slice, above and across through Pendleton, is the northern region supervisor who will provide training and technical assistance to 27 schools in that area. The funding for that position is from the Oregon University Systems Gear Up Grant that's been awarded. Aspire is a partner in that grant. The fourth position is the AmeriCorps supervisor, who is responsible for coordinating the AmeriCorps grant, recruiting, placing, and retaining all of the AmeriCorps members. Even though they serve at the school and their day-to-day supervision is provided by a school staff member, we have a huge amount of grant requirements for reporting and supporting those members. So that's the fourth position. And the fifth is the administrative assistant position that supports specific program tasks, such as the continuing curriculum development for Aspire.
Further questions, comments?
Madam Jankowska,
please.
You only have five FTEs. How many volunteers does that produce from those five FTEs?
Our last count was mid-year this year, about January of 2003. We had, at that time, 427. When we do our year-end count, I'm expecting it to be well over 500.
Madam, it just reminds me of the CASA program, which is one of my favorites. They do an incredible job for abused children in our court system, and sometimes those volunteers are the only ones that really follow those kids over a linear piece of time. This strikes me as a very similar program. You're going to be mentoring kids for 3 or 4 years through their high school years, trying to get them onto a higher education of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
If you're 5FTE, you're producing a huge number of volunteers, just as the CASA program does. And I assume that you're going to expand this and try to reach all the schools ultimately.
Absolutely. My goal is to serve as many public and private high schools in the state of Oregon who request the program.
Committee members, I think that this is a huge, this is the kind of program that I think all of us should be happy to see being brought forward to be instituted in this way. With no general fund investment at all,
mm-hmm.
we're managing to be able to reach kids who wouldn't ordinarily have access easily into the higher education system. And I think that in all of our legislative districts, just looking at who's sitting on this mm-hmm. committee, there are very clear benefits to the student populations that we represent in this building to having this program put in place. And based on the information that the committee's got today, I am very comfortable that the exposure to the general fund is that there isn't any, and that the general fund will be safe, and that if we make the recommended amendments to Senate Bill 184, that the program can go ahead with the personnel that they need to be able to grow the volunteers and take care of the requests from the grant funds for the reporting requirements. And I think this is a good thing.
Are we in work session?
Sure. We sure should be.
We haven't got a quorum.
I don't think we ever did. With that, we will. What we ought to do here is close the work session on House Bill 5052, and on the advice, the very good advice of Senator Gordley, open the work session on Senate Bill 184. And with the committee's permission, I would like to make it clear the changes that we're going to make to the Dash 1 amendments. Mm-hmm. Mr. Bender, could you take us through this?
Yes, I certainly can. The changes that we're recommending to the Dash 1 amendments are the three items that are in the bottom bullet of the Aspire program sheet that we put together for you. And those are to make three changes. The first is to eliminate from the bill the and if you're looking at the bill itself, this is at the bottom of page 2, monies received from appropriations would no longer be deposited in the fund. So you're taking out the word, the last word on page 2, appropriations, and replacing that with contributions and administrative charges. we'd ask that you do the understanding that Legislative Council may make some form and style changes to this, because they haven't seen all of these changes. But this is the concept.
So, that so contributions and administrative charges?
Right. So it would read that monies received from contributions, administrative charges, donations, and grants shall be credited to the fund instead of received from appropriations, donations.
Okay.
And we are recommending that. We are recommending that some language we had put in the amendments earlier, because we thought that the agency wanted to have authority to establish fees for this program. We later found out that that was not correct. So that is why we're taking out rows 3 through 7, which would have given them authority to establish fees for the program.
And if I might just seek clarification on this, the school's participation financially in this is permissive on their part. They're not required to make that contribution unless